Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and we're going to be talking about writing today. Grit for the oyster, 250 pearls of wisdom for aspiring writers. My guest today is Deborah M. Cody, and she's got a few things under her belt as a writer. And we're going to be chatting with her about some tips where perhaps it can help you. Deborah, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Deborah, you have had a passion for writing. I mean, anybody that gives any time into putting a book together, it's just absolutely marvelous. But tell me, what was it that made you decide that this was something you really wanted to dedicate a great deal of your time, effort, and energy to?
Well, I'm actually a late bloomer, if you will, Donna. I was 45 when I started writing. That was about 6 years ago. Don't do the math. But I was...
Okay, that's fair.
As a child, I was a rabid reader. I read everything I could get my hands on. And several books had a huge influence on me and planted the seed that maybe one day I would like to write a book that would touch other people's hearts the way that these books touched mine. And it kind of got put on the back burner. Life happened, as it does, and I went a different direction. And so for about 30 years, that seed just stayed in the ground, unfertilized. And finally, the fertilizer kicked in many years later when I was sitting in a dentist office at age 45, and my youngest child was about to leave the nest for college. And I happened to open a magazine, and there was an ad for a writer's contest. And a light bulb sprung on inside my head, and I thought, wow, no time like the present. And after having an almost 30-year career at that point as an occupational therapist dealing with hand injuries and a 20-year career as a piano teacher, I turned around and decided it was time to write. So that's when it started.
Wow. Now, tell us about your first item that you wrote, because so many of my listeners, they may say, oh, it scares me. I don't know what to do. You see a contest. I just know I wouldn't win if I entered it. Tell us what you did in that first experience. What was it you chose as a topic, and what happened with the contest?
Well, I didn't win.
You did not win.
I didn't even place. Nothing. Zip. Nada. So that was my first lesson in writing, that someone must have, you got to have a vision, and you've got to persevere. And I knew nothing. I didn't know a participle from a dipwad. I didn't know. I thought those three little dots at the end of a sentence were called eclipses. I hadn't written anything since high school. So it was, you know, I had to kind of pull myself up by the bootstraps and say, if I really want to do this thing, then I'm going to have to learn. So I went to the public library, which anyone can do. And these days you can, you know, find so many wonderful things on the Internet. You don't even have to step foot in the public library. But I did some research, and I checked out books on style, grammar, punctuation. And I kind of gave myself a little crash course. And I decided magazines was the way to go for me. And I truly believe that now. I teach writers' workshops all over. And I often tell people who aspire to write a book, you need to break it down. Don't go for the whole enchilada right off the bat. Break it down into bite-sized morsels so you can achieve something and you learn along the way. Plus, it gives you all kinds of great clips and experience for the publishers, because they, these days, they're very picky about who they're going to take a chance on.
Mm-hmm.
And if they see you have a lot of experience, then it's a feather in your cap. So I was, that's what I did. I started out with five magazine articles, and a good, and I'm sure your readers, well, I'm not so sure, because I see it at a lot of my writers' conferences that people don't really know this, but this is something very good to know. There's a couple of books out there. One I highly recommend called Writer's Market. It's a big, fat book.
Mm-hmm.
Comes out every year. I'm sure you're acquainted with it.
Yes.
And it has all the information for every kind of publication out there. And it also gives you examples of how to write manuscripts and queries in order to get these publishers interested in what you're marketing. And it tells you the guidelines, the word counts. It has magazines. It has books. It has even agents, all kinds of information, just about everything you need to know. It's not a cheap little book. They run probably $30, $40 now, but it is a must. It's an essential part of getting your work out there. Well, I found out about this book, so I got it. And also, I write inspirational, so there's another one that I use as well for inspirational magazines and books. It has a little bit more information in it, but they pretty much have the same. And then you follow those guidelines precisely, because if you don't, those editors have thousands, literally thousands of submissions per week, and they're just as happy to add yours to their slush pile if there's something blatantly wrong with it. So you must follow the guidelines precisely. If they say they want 700 words, don't send them 704. You may send them 698, perhaps, but you have to get it as close to their guidelines as possible. And some people do it different ways. I wrote my articles first and then perused the market, writer's market, to find out where they would have the best fit.
Mm-hmm.
And then I sent the some require the manuscript right off the bat. Some require a query letter. And so I was a little afraid of queries at first because it has to be a very good pitch. That's a one-page pitch letter.
Mm-hmm.
I was a little nervous about those, so I only went for the smaller magazines that asked for the entire manuscript right off the bat because I thought, if they would just read it, I know they would like it, but I have to get past that pitch, you know, and let them ask for it. So that's the way I went, and I was able to have about 10 pieces published within that first year.
That's amazing. Now, in talking, you opted for magazine to begin with, which I really think is a very good thing to do. Now, did you go for just the singular article, or did you try to get a column? What did you do?
Well, At first, I just submitted articles, singular articles, based on different things that I knew about, mostly mothering. I know a lot about that. I didn't know much about anything else, to tell you the truth. But one thing leads to another. And if a publisher decides they like you or an editor, they will sometimes then ask you, they'll give you an assignment. Could you possibly consider writing about this subject? And then you expand your knowledge and you do your research and you make sure you learn something about that. And you find other sources, people, different publications that will teach you about that. And then you're able to write with some authority. About 2 years after I had been writing magazine articles, I was approached by a Central Florida newspaper to write a column for them, a little humor life column, which I call Grace Notes. And I've been writing that for about 3 years now, and that's a monthly column. And that really helps you cut your teeth because you have to write very concisely, and it teaches you how to edit yourself.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's really a challenge. I think that when you are writing something like a monthly newsletter or anything like that, if you're tight for space, and just about every publication, especially with people wanting to conserve paper and other things, people being so busy, they don't have a lot of time to read. If you look at a lot of magazines, dependent on their format, things are so tightly put together, so you could in 30 seconds scan 2 pages of information.
Yes, and that's so hard to do. People don't realize it until they start trying to write concisely.
Right. It is really a challenge. Now, I liked your dedication in the front of your book to aspiring writers like us, perspiring today to become inspiring tomorrow. In the crafting of your exquisite literary pearl, may this book be grit for your oyster. And, of course, all of us know that the pearl within the oyster is originated by a piece of grit, sand, rock, whatever you want to describe, getting in and being an irritant so that it begins to form the pearl, and the pearl is formed by layers. And really, life is like that. Life, we have our layering that we go through, and we acquire a layering, and then sometimes we want to strip some of that away. And I think writing is a wonderful, wonderful instrument to be able to use. Now, people that want to write, There is not a human being on this planet, I believe. It's been my experience and observation anyway. There's not a person on this planet that doesn't have a story to tell. And so many times people will say, oh my goodness, do you know how many books are in the bookstore? There's a lot of people. They already know about this. Why would my story be special? And I've always told people, it's your personal paradigm. It's your personal experience with whatever tears, joy, any, you know, ecstasy, desperation, whatever. It's your story. And for all of the millions of books that are out there, your story is still your story. Nobody else has lived it exactly like you. We're all individuals. What would you say to someone that wants to find their writer's voice?
Well, I agree with what you said 100%, and I think that that grit in everyone's oyster, the friction is a unique process to you, and it will surprise you how many people can identify with what you're going through, and people want to hear your story. There's a very large market out there for first-person stories. I was quite surprised. That is all I wrote for the first 2 or 3 years, especially with magazines. In the inspirational market particularly, there's just amazing. There's hundreds and hundreds of publications who are looking for first-person stories because that's what people want to read.
Mm-hmm.
And I would definitely recommend if someone is interested in telling their story that they do a little research first because they get a lot of these. I'm told by some editors that I've spoken with that, you know, they get a lot of manuscripts and different queries and things that people just haven't done their homework. And if you have one chance for them to look at your piece, you want to give it your best shot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's plenty of websites. I have some here. In fact, I started a blog with the three co-authors of Grit for the Oyster, and it's a wonderful source of information. Would you like me to give that now?
Oh, that would be wonderful. Go right ahead.
Well, it's www.gritfortheoyster, that's all run together in one word, -book.blogspot.com.
All right, you better repeat that again.
All right. It's www.gritfortheoyster-book.blogspot.com. And we update it daily, and we have all kinds of wonderful little tips on there. We have guest authors, and it's a very good source. And there are just infinite other sources that you can learn before you do your homework, before you submit something. Make it the best it can possibly be.
I agree with that. You have a number of different comments in your book, one by Karen Ball. She said, I learned long ago, and I'm going to quote directly from your book, that one of the worst things I could do was read reviews of my books. If they're critical, I beat myself up. Sure, I can't string a sentence together. On the other side, if the reviews are glowing, I'm far too prone to believe my own press and think I'm the proverbial cat's meow. Of course, the reality is someplace between those two absurdities, and the best way for me to keep my feet and heart planted there in the peaceful reality where I realize that I've been given a task and my job is simply to write to the best of my ability is to not read the reviews. I just keep my focus on what I'm doing and telling my stories. And when it comes right down to it, that's all that matters. And I, having gone through that experience myself, it's amazing when you get it, you find out there's always going to be a critic. Always going to be a critic.
Absolutely.
And then there's always going to be those that'll just be gushy, gushy, glowing, glowing. And the point is that you just need to know that you have done the best you possibly can, and then you move on to the next one. You don't get stuck there.
So true.
There's a lot of people that just want to write once, and that's it, and that's fine. But most of the time, it's been my observation that once you get the writing bug fever, you don't want to stop because there's always something else you want to share, communicate about, whether it's fiction or nonfiction or a mixture of both.
Yes, and there's so much truth in fiction. I mean, that's what
I learned
the most through fiction, and I love to read fiction because I feel like it expands my knowledge of all kinds of things I would have never necessarily looked up nonfiction. And it speaks to you. It touches your heart.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There's so many ways to get information out there. And the telling of the story is, to me, the most effective way of being able to do that. And I know that you went through, and you still go through, because a writer never stops having these experiences of perhaps having that astute observation on someone's part, and they give you some information, and you go, oh, geez, I didn't want to hear that. Oh, you mean I've got to do this whole thing all over again? But maybe they publish it anyway. They just want you to pay attention for the future. But it's an ongoing process. And lots of times, I think, people will get so caught up in trying to be experts grammatically that they lose the juice of the stuff that they've got to tell. Maybe perfectly done in English, but they've lost all of the warmth of what was supposed to be conveyed. How can someone write in their own style and yet have that adjustment editorially, maybe with a little bit of grammar, but some of it shouldn't be corrected, depending on the style?
Well, so true. And like you mentioned before, it's your writer's voice, and it's a hard thing to come by. It's a balance act. You have to try on different pairs of shoes before you find one that fit. And it's the same thing with your voice. You know, when you first start writing, you generally reflect writers that have meant something to you, and the writing, the things that you've read, the things that you've liked that have touched you, you use those type of styles and the same kind of, and what we mean by voice, it's like a human voice, but it reflects through your writing. If you recognize your great Aunt Martha's voice because you heard it so many times, or your mother is a good example, if you're in a room full of people, and you can pick out your mother's voice. I'm told this by my children many times. Mom, we can hear you in a whole stadium full of people. You know, you can pick that voice out. It's unique. It's got nuances. It's got reflections that are unique to that person. And that's the way the writer's voice is, too. And it's hard for a while to figure out what your voice is, because we are made up of so many different types of beings inside us that, you know, we see things seriously while we're at work. We laugh our heads off when we're with our friends. You know, we're different people in different environments. And so you have to kind of try those shoes on before you find the right pair.
Oh, I agree. Now, you have some real good tips in here. And this comes from Joanna Bloss. She said, 9 ways to use downtime, and I just had to chuckle when I went through some of this. I thought, gee, this sounds so familiar. She said, read a book in the same genre that you write, or one that you'd like to write. And you just said that. If you have an author that the style of writing that is just so absolutely awesome, be aware of that. Read their material and ask yourself, why do you like it so much? And then realize you can incorporate it. We all copy to a degree, until we're able to evolve ourselves. And there's no way not to do that, because we always stand on the shoulders of those that go before us. The regular listeners of the show hear me say that so many times.
Yeah.
But I say that with sincerity, because it's true.
Oh, it is.
I mean, it. We learn from grandma, and we learn from mom or dad, good, bad, or indifferent. We're learning from everything that's around us, because that's the way life is. And then you say, try something you've never done before. Take a cooking class. Go bungee jumping. You never know what idea seeds might be planted. And is that ever the truth? Do something differently. And then stop and ask yourself, how did you feel about it? What did you like about it? What didn't you like about it? Just all kinds of variables can come in. And I loved what Joanna said. She said, some of her best writing ideas come while she's cleaning toilets. Do a menial task and you might find yourself doing some serious brainstorming. It's amazing how when you do something that is menial, where you don't have to think and you relax your brain, it can be raking leaves in the backyard, bathing the dog, it can be anything. But Steve Allen used that technique. He would just go do something, and he had pads of paper all over his house. And he had a pen with every single pad of paper. He made sure that every single one was in place where it's supposed to be, because he never knew when he was going to get an idea, and the man was a genius.
Yes.
He wrote down all kinds of stuff.
I write on my hand. I write on toilet paper. I write on anything I can find.
Oh, yes. You'll always know a writer because they'll say, wait a minute, have you got a napkin?
Yeah, exactly.
That's one of the standbys in writing. Go to a bookstore and browse the shelves. What catches your eye? What inspires you? Read a classic book by a classic author. Copy down 10 opening paragraphs to 10 different books. Which one captures your attention and why? These are great questions to ask. Write something not meant for publication that is completely out of your comfort zone. If you write fiction, try a how-to article. If you're a novelist, write a poem. And then complete a task you've neglected too long. Organize a closet. Have lunch with an old friend. Catch up on your scrapbooks. Get a haircut, manicure, or a massage. And then also, maybe doing a retreat. The mind is so fascinating, and life is full of so much that we can write about, that I think all of those tips are really, really good. What's your attitude about writer's block?
Well, so many of those things Joanna mentioned are what I recommend for writer's block. She is a single mom of four children. And, you know, that really speaks powerfully when you realize that, you know, she actually has to do those things to get her writing time in. When you relax yourself, it kind of unstops the toilet, so to speak. Everything starts to flow a little better. You know, if you do the manicure, if you do the read something totally different, if you do a little writing off the subject matter of what you're striving and hurrying and trying so hard, you know, to pull out of your weary brain, and get away from that busyness of life, then that's what you're unblocking, actually. You're letting those brain cells get some new life and everything flows a little better.
Let's address being paid for work. You're writing for a magazine or magazines. How did you go about getting paid? Did you get paid at the beginning? I mean, did you just submit just for the sake of writing? Let's address that because some people would like to have this as a vocation, and they would like to be able to support themselves through writing. What words of wisdom would you have to share with them?
Well, freelancing is what that is called. That's when you don't write for a specific periodical, but you submit to different ones. Magazines pay anywhere from nothing. Some will give you copies of the magazine, like 3 or 6 or 10, however many, as your payment. Others, 3 cents a word, 5 cents a word. In the inspirational genre, they generally range from about 3 cents to 15 cents a word. And in the larger magazines, as you're checking out of the grocery store, the big glossies there can range from $1 to $1.50 a word. But those are very difficult to get in. They pretty much invite you, and they use excerpts from books a lot of times, and they have their own staff writers. So you're generally looking at starting at the bottom rung of the ladder. I have done some freebies, and that's a little controversial. Some professional writers feel like you should always be paid for your work, period, and they refuse to do anything that is a non-payment. But, you know, I found when I've spoken with those people that a year down the road, I've got 15 clips under my belt, and they're still trying to get one.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I view it as you have to start somewhere. So start at the bottom, and you start gradually climbing the rung up, rung after rung after rung, till you get up to the 15 cents a word ones, or even if you're fortunate in the secular, you get up to 25, 30 cents a word. All that information is in the writer's market. It will tell you, and you can go to the website of the magazine that you've targeted. If you're like me and you write the article first, I just write what is on my heart, and then I try to market it, although some people do it the other way around. They'll research the magazine that they want to, you know, work for,
mm-hmm.
and then they'll see. Magazines have a grocery list. They don't just take anything. They are looking for specific things. And you can find that in their guidelines that are in the writer's market or on their website. You can always go to their website, and they'll have, if they're interested in others, they don't just have staff writers, they will have the writer's guidelines available there. And you can read all what they're looking for. And if it's a cat magazine, don't send a dog article. But in general, you be careful what you send. I have sent a few pieces that I just really did not think would fly with certain magazines, but I just wanted to give it a whirl anyway, and they were accepted. So sometimes you just don't know in which direction the wind is blowing in that editorial office. They may be deciding suddenly they're going to go a little bit different direction than they've been. Another thing I highly recommend is to read the magazine, get a gist for what the feel is, who their market is, what the age range is of their readers. There's all kinds of feelings you can get from a magazine, what types of articles that they like, that they generally go for, and then you can tailor yours that way. And then, again, you will, once you have a few clips, the editors will look at you, the higher-paying magazines will look at you much more seriously.
Let's talk about copyright for a moment. You have something you put together. It is your material. It is submitted to a magazine. If it is a freebie, it is my understanding that's still your property.
Correct.
So, but if they pay for it, then they are buying the right. Now, in that situation, do you give up your copyright?
There are different kinds of rights. And in your, it depends on what rights they're purchasing. Usually on your manuscript in the top right-hand corner, you will, in the top left-hand corner, you'll write your contact information, your name, address, email, phone number. In the right-hand corner, you write the word count and what rights you are offering. There are first rights, which means that magazine, that periodical has the first right to print it, first of all. And you're not supposed to have, and I know people cheat on this a bit with, you know, everything now online and newsletters and different things, but you're not supposed to have had that published anywhere prior to their publishing it because you're selling them the right to do that. Then there's all rights, which means you cannot ever use that piece again. That belongs to them now and forever. If you sell them first rights, usually, and this is all in your contract, it will be spelled out in your contract when they send it to you, and you can haggle a little bit back and forth if you don't agree with anything, but usually the rights will revert back to you after the piece is published, if you sell them first rights. So then you have the opportunity to sell reprint or second rights. You get much less money for it, but it's kind of like it's all the work's already done, so it's mm-hmm. it's freebie, you know. Whereas you might sell first rights for 15 cents a word, you might sell reprint or second rights for 5 cents a word. But it's yours to do with what you please, mm-hmm. whereas it is not yours ever again if you sell all rights. And then there's also different types of, you know, serial rights, North American rights versus world rights versus European rights. But that's usually for, like, that's not generally for magazines. You don't really have to mm-hmm. worry about that. For that sort of thing. That would be for books or plays or, you know, if you're trying to get television, mm-hmm. you know, that sort of thing.
Right. Well, we have covered so much here. And, Deborah, I just think that you've got a lot of good wisdom in your book, Grit for the Oyster, 250 Pearls of Wisdom for Aspiring Writers. And it's good to have a writer like yourself discussing these realities because we have to deal with not just the creative side, but also the practical bread and butter side of life.
Yes.
And for those that would want to have a career as a writer, there is a lot of work here. There's a lot of dedication. There's a lot of commitment that has to be recognized. And I always chuckle when someone says, oh, I just got this and I just put out a book in 3 days or I did this, that, or the other. And I always have to smile. Because I invariably, when I review it, I find that it's like a 3-day headache. So, you know, it's just not all put together the way it should be. And lots of times people don't realize that there may be that occasional opportunity. But if you're going to put something together, it's going to take time, it's going to take effort, it's going to take being able to tighten it so that it flows right. And there's just a lot to it.
Oh,
but,
yes.
Oh,
my
you
first
can have
novel
a good
took
time.
2 years to write from my very first, and, you know, it takes a long time to get it right.
That's right, and it's good to have people to evaluate it. Okay, my guest, Deborah Cody, go to her website, and you can get all kinds of good information. And correct me if I don't get this right, Deborah.
Okay.
gritfortheoyster-book.blogspot.com.
That would be our blog, and then my website is DeborahCody.com, and that's spelled D-E-B-O-R-A-C-O-T-Y donnacibo.com. And I would be most happy. I have a newsletter that comes out quarterly, and I'm going to be including some tips for writing in that as well. And I would be, you can just click on the little thing there when you go to my website, and that's a free newsletter, and I'll be happy to have you included on my list. And I also have all my books listed there. I have 9 books that I've written or co-written, and I'm negotiating a 10th currently.
Congratulations. It was a delight having you as a
guest,
Deborah.
Thank you so much, Donna. My pleasure.
This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. Don't go away. Remember, DeborahCoty.com, DeborahCoty.com. We're coming back in just a moment.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, TTAP.com.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna, and telephone lines are now open. If you'd like to give me a buzz, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here are the telephone numbers to call in to, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Also, Canadians, it's 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756, and we have a direct line of 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. Now, I just want you to know all I need from you is your first name or your initial. After that, you're welcome to ask me a question. After I give you my insights, you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you like. It's fun, it's easy, and very simple to do. So give me a buzz if you would like to chat. And there are some very special happenings that are going to be coming up shortly. In fact, there is a special promotion that I am becoming involved with. You know, the holiday season is going to be here before we blink an eye. Can you believe how quickly this year has gone by? And my award-winning children's book, God's Gift, Kiss, I am giving a very special offer on. So if you would like to find out more about that, if you have a special child in your life that you have between the ages of 3 to 10, and you would like to give them an absolutely gorgeous, gorgeous book that will become a tradition in your family, then call my office, because I am offering a special of $15 for the book set, and I will be happy to personalize that book for that special child as well as autograph it for you. But you need to call my office directly, and that number is 800-872-8852. That's 800-872-8852. I get so much good material from so many people, and I want to let you know how much I appreciate you taking the time to send me what you think I might be interested in, whether it is a story about a particular person, if it is a recipe, whatever it is that you would like for me to be aware of, it's great. I cannot use all of the material that's sent to me, but I want you to know how much I appreciate it. So if you want to send me something, send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna at Delphi, D-E-L-P-H-I, International.com. And I will try to respond to you at this business trip. I have a few hundred emails that I've got to get back to. And it takes me a little bit of time to do that with taking care of the preparation for the program, etc. But I do, again, want to tell you most sincerely how much I appreciate your jokes, your comments, and all the different things that I get. There is a particular story that I wanted to share with you today that I thought was significant. We don't often realize how, as individuals, we can affect someone by our attitudes, by our actions, by our caring. Well, I'm going to share with you after this caller, I'm going to share a story with you about a person that changed a child's life in such a way that it impacted their thinking in a marvelous manner. So we'll be talking about that in a minute. Let's go to our first caller of the day. Hello, and welcome to the show.
Oh, hello, Donna. I'm calling to ask you for some insight, if you would.
All right. Dear, give me your first name or initial and where you're calling from.
Linda from Washington.
Linda from Washington. Is that the state of Washington or Washington, D.C.?
The state.
And where are you in Washington?
Up in Bellingham.
In Bellingham. All right. What's your question for me?
Well, I am really wanting some insight. My life is just in a place where I could certainly use a little bit of additional information to go by.
All right. Well, let me just give you, first of all, the impressions I have right off the bat, and then if you'll need to give me a specific question, hon.
All right.
The first thing that I am looking at is not only are you pulling yourself up by your bootstraps, but you're having to break a particular thinking pattern that you have followed because it was what you were taught many, many years ago. And this is scary to you. You're not unlike any of us at any given time when we find that paradigms are changing so fast and we go, well, wait a minute, this is what I was taught to do. I was taught that I should brush my teeth up and down and not do it in circles, and now I've got a toothbrush that goes in circles. Is this correct? Am I doing the right thing?
That sounds interesting, yes. What would the thinking be?
Well, it has to do with your personal life. It has to do with your values. Now, when I'm saying this,
mm-hmm.
and I use the toothbrush as a ridiculous example, but
yes.
Apparently it conveyed what it needed to convey. So what I'm looking at is, let's say you had a belief system that if you were working on Sunday, that was a terrible thing to do, because all of your life, this was something you never, ever did. In your family, it wasn't done. In the social environment you were in, it was never done. And again, this is a ridiculous example, but I'm using it just to illustrate a point. And so you come to a point where maybe you are offered a job that's going to cause you to work on Sunday, and that's in violation of everything culturally, emotionally, and mentally that you were indoctrinated and raised with. But this isn't set in stone. So you feel like, gee whiz, maybe I'm sacrificing family values when I do this, so I'm a bad person and I can't do that. So this wonderful working opportunity that's in front of me, I can't take because it's going to require my flying to New York City or to Atlanta on Sunday. And so it could cause you a lot of trauma. And again, this is just an example. So you finally meet someone that says to you, well, what's wrong with working on Sunday? well, this is the way it's been all of my life. If I change it, yada, yada, yada. And so what you do is this person says to you, but couldn't you do it on Monday? Or couldn't you do something special on Saturday? It's just one day of a week. And you go, oh, I guess I could do something different. So maybe you'd make Friday your special family day, or you would do it. You would take everything that was so precious to you, and you just shift it to another day. Do you see my point?
Mm-hmm.
You're not sacrificing your values. You are not losing something.
It's just change.
It's the change of how you do it.
Now, does this have to do with relationships or in locating my next?
I think it has to do with a professional aspect of your life and how it is going to affect your personal life. And
okay,
I think
I'm wondering if buying raw property is a good idea at this point in time.
Oh, of course. There's nothing wrong with raw property if you have a concept or an understanding of how it can be utilized.
It's just the duration of a project at this point in time where things seem so up in the air.
Well, any time in life, dear, things are going to be up in the air.
That's true.
You have to understand. See, this, I think, is where you are having to make a break. What is occurring is the so-called absolute rules of real estate investing, et cetera, whatever they can be, they don't always apply. What you do is use good sense. And by good sense, it means you do not work from fear. If you're fearful, don't do it, because
well,
you're going to make a wrong decision.
As a woman starting from scratch again, I lost my husband and just starting from, you know, the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And who to align with? I have two men that want to marry.
Oh, forget the marriage stuff. That's nonsense.
I know, yeah.
Just leave it alone. Don't worry about that.
And
well, you're interested in real estate, let me just make a suggestion
mm-hmm.
to you. If you're here in the state of Washington, one of the biggest things that you have to be aware of is floodplain, because we have people that are building all over this state, just like they've done in other states, especially California. I can remember a time when they were building on dry lakes, and you'd say, a dry lake. Why in the world are you going to build on a dry lake? We don't, you know, well, we haven't had rain in 50 years. Well, trust me, they started building on that dry lake, and they ended up having a storm of storms, and all the houses they put on that lake floated off. Nobody listened to anybody because they got greedy. So what you need to do, that you're starting over again, I'm sorry to hear about your husband, but that's a fact. You're starting
yeah.
over again.
Right.
So you need faith in yourself. And realize that all you do is take a step at a time. I wouldn't care if there were 45 men lined up to marry you. Now, this is having to do with your belief system. You do not have to have a male in your life at this time that you marry for the sake of security.
Right. That's something I wrestle with, you know, the old ideas of
that
one.
That's right. And this is a paradigm shift. You should understand that if you want a partner in your life, that's one thing. But you don't want to compromise by accepting what is not real because of old belief system that, by golly, this is the only way to go. If you don't have a man in your life, you're not going to make it, sweetheart.
Well,
that's
when you have
true.
To pay full price for everything when you're not used to paying anything.
Well, that's all right. You're learning. You're growing up.
That's a major adjustment. And then you lose all your capital. And so I'm thinking it's time.
All right.
You know, it'd be good to align with someone that's capable.
Oh, well, that's ridiculous. That's a little girl that's talking.
Oh, of course.
Of course it is. And I'm telling you, you're not a little girl. Don't talk like that.
Okay. So
you're an adult woman that for the first time in your life is having to look at realities that you were insulated from. Is it fun? Heck no. Been there, done that myself. It's never fun. But life happens. And you will be stronger and you are going to be a woman of depth because of dealing with it. And don't be afraid to ask for help. It's good to have men in your life, but it doesn't mean that you marry him because the guy's wealthy.
Oh,
I've
it's not about that.
So many
it was
years.
One in particular that wants to move in. I'm holding
him off. Oh, forget that nonsense. No, don't even go there.
I know. I thought you know, I want to accommodate, and it got very close.
Oh, no. Well, I'll just tell you, and we've got to go to a break now, but
okay.
I will tell you, Linda, be true to yourself.
Yeah.
You've got to learn about the paradigms, hon. They are something you can get stuck in them, and you're going to get stuck in one big mucky mess, and don't let anybody move in with you, period. Don't do that. Stand on your own 2 feet.
Yeah,
I've got to
totally
go.
I've
got to take a break, dear.
All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome,
right.
Linda. Have a wonderful day.
You too.
This is Donna Sebo. Hey, we're taking a break, but we're going to be back. And if I have opportunity, I'll be sharing that special story with you. Don't go away.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756, or 530-876-3222. And remember, all I need is your first name or initial, and then I'll be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Now, before I share this special story with you, I want to tell you tomorrow we're going to be going to Ireland, that delightful country in the world where there's all kinds of legends, and we're going to find out about something that's totally suitable for Halloween. Zombies, yes. We're going to find all about them. Did you think that it was just in the Caribbean? They've got them in Ireland, too, all over the world. So Bob Curran is going to be my guest. We're going to be chatting with him. Then on Thursday, we're going to be talking about UFOs over New York City. Aha, yeah, good stuff. And then we're going to be talking about some wonderfully powerful women. Nancy Parizo is going to be my guest on Friday. It's about their own frontier, women intellectuals revisioning the American West. Now, a lot of the freedoms that we have today came about because of these pioneering spirits, and we're going to find out about them. It's just absolutely delightful to be able to have the people on that I do, and we've got a great lineup for the rest of the month. So if you want, go into the VBSradio.com listing site, and you'll find out about all these authors that are going to be coming up on my show. And we've got a great lineup that's coming up in November. My goodness, before we know it, it's the holiday season. Just amazing how time passes so quickly. Well, this is a story that I came across. It started 25 years ago. And there was a nurse that helped to save a baby named Melissa. Melissa's mom, Lauren Rose, went into labor at just 29 weeks. Now, when Melissa was born, she weighed just 2 pounds, 6 ounces. In 1982, Melissa's odds of surviving that premature birth were pretty, pretty meager. However, they found after she was born, not only was she so very tiny, but she had to have bowel surgery because of being born so early, the bowel had not developed properly. It was something that had to be done, and her mother, Lauren, would just go through all kinds of emotions. Well, there is a nurse Her name is Huffy. And every day when she was with tiny, tiny Melissa, she would talk to her. And Huffy would massage Melissa until she was able to breathe easily. Often she'd go into spasms where she would stop breathing altogether. Now, Huffy herself didn't have any children, but she loved all of these preemie babies that she was taking care of. And she was always there for the parents. She absolutely loved being a nurse. Well, Melissa, at 2.5 months, finally was able to go home, and Huffy would often tell the mother, she may be tiny, but she fights big. And she just, when Melissa left that hospital, well, Huffy cried right along with the mother, saying she never thought she'd see her again. However, Melissa, she grew up healthy, strong, and she was told when she was growing up how the nurses at the particular hospital, St. Christopher's, had really enabled her to survive. Well, Melissa decided she wanted to be a nurse too. She wanted to be able to do exactly what had been done for her for other babies. And her mother was thrilled with the concept. So she said, you know what? I want to work at the same hospital. I want to be able to be in the very environment that helped to save my life, enabled me to live the wonderful life that I have. Well, when the time came for her to apply for an opening at the hospital, she found that there was an opportunity for her. She was introduced to the NICU clinical coordinator. And when she was introduced to this coordinator and she told the nurse her name, she said, I can't believe this. I'm the nurse that took care of you when you were in the same ward, when you were a baby. Melissa was amazed. Here was going to be a person that she'd be working side by side with, that would be trained with, the very one that saved her own life. So she qualified as a nurse. She was right there working alongside Huffy and all of the other women that had been in this particular unit for so long. And she said it meant so much to her because she was looking at these tiny, tiny babies. And she said, I'm able to give hope to families that want happy endings, just like my mother wanted a happy ending. And look how I turned out. So she would share that with people, that she was a preemie herself, and she was able to make mom smile. She said, miracles do happen. Don't ever give up on them. She arrives early, Melissa does, every day for each of her shifts. And she and Huffy, the woman that saved her life, celebrate every time a preemie is able to go home. She said, it is amazing to me that I was able to work side by side and still am working side by side with this woman that's helped to save my life. And I'm learning from her the very skills that enabled her to give me my life so that I can give life to other people. I just love this story and I wanted to share it with you. You don't know how your words, your actions, your feelings, you just don't know how they're going to affect someone else. And it's who you are that makes a difference. It doesn't matter if you have gold earrings on or diamonds in your nose. It doesn't make a difference. What makes a difference is the quality of you as a human being and how you bring that quality into everyday living. It can be a smile. It can be a thoughtful word. Sometimes it's just careful listening. Being compassionate, being thoughtful. Sometimes it may mean you have to be critical of someone. But whatever it is, recognize that it's what you give, the quality of who you are, that makes the difference. And Huffy, in a million years, never thought she would ever meet up with one of her babies, much less work with them. But she did. And she was shown how valuable a human being she really is. This is so true. Well, we're out of time. We're going to be talking together tomorrow here, same time, same place, right here on BBS Radio. Remember always, you're the master of your fate, you Ah, the captain of your soul. This is Donna Siebel. You have a wonderful, wonderful day, a wonderful evening. I'll be back here, same time, same place. Good stuff. All about zombies tomorrow. Talk with you then. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.